Hello, and welcome to the Reach or Miss Show, the podcast for the customer-focused entrepreneur, where Hayut Yogev speaks with entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs about reaching or missing the critical point of approaching the right customer with the right message at the right time and place. The point where business success starts. And here is your host, Hayut Yogev.
Reach or Miss, Episode 53. This is the Reach or Miss podcast 1 year anniversary. Hey Reachers! We are celebrating our first birthday, and I've chosen to dedicate this episode to recalling the most important issues and the best advice of the remarkably successful entrepreneurs that have been our guests this year. For each of our interview's questions, I chose one or two answers that best represent the main inspirational message our guests delivered. I believe the most important message each of you should take from these 52 episodes is the huge importance of speaking, engaging, and focusing on the right audience for your specific startup or company as the key for entrepreneurial business success. At the show notes of this episode, you will find our birthday gift to you, the list of tools most highly recommended by these successful entrepreneurs and opinion leaders. For the first answer, I chose the answer of Chris Brogan. Chris is one of the fathers of social media marketing. I believe he combines the art of attracting customers with the capabilities of social media as a marketing tool. Chris Brogan provides strategy and skills for the modern business. He is CEO of Owner Media Group, a sought-after public speaker, and the New York Times best-selling author of 9 books and working on his 10th. Forbes listed Chris as one of the must-follow marketing minds of 2014, plus listed his website as one of the 100 best websites for entrepreneurs. State Social rated Chris as the third power influencer online. Chris lives in Northern Massachusetts. His better half is Jacqueline Carly, and between the two of them, they have 3 kids. I just shared with our listeners what you actually were doing until now. Can you please share with us what are you doing and most passionate about today, and where are you heading?
Well, thank you. That's a great question. I'm really interested, and I have been for many years, in one way or another, about how do companies use technology to drive better human interaction. I think that a lot of times we focus on the wrong part. We focus so much on all the various new channels, all the new technology, all the new ways that we can automate and disassociate sometimes from our customers. And I think at the same time, what we really want in life is we want to be seen. We, you know, customers really want to be seen. They want to be have the sense that people understand them. Meanwhile, what the business really wants is they want people to love what they sell. So to me, the challenge isn't really ever about the channel. The challenge is about helping a customer feel like they're getting what they want and delivering that. So what I work on are ways to help out companies and individuals with figuring out that. How do we drive business with that in mind?
I love it. Guy Kawasaki is the interviewee you have heard the most from. I love hearing him tell the story of his career, and I believe that the fact Guy had the chance to learn how traditional business sell has had a positive impact on his success. Guy Kawasaki is the chief evangelist of Canva, an online graphic design tool. He is a brand ambassador for Mercedes-Benz and an executive fellow of the Haas School of Business, UC Berkeley. He was the chief evangelist of Apple and a trustee of the Mickey Media Foundation. He is also the author of The Art of the Start 2.0, The Art of Social Media, Enchantment, and 9 other books. Kawasaki has a BA from Stanford University and an MBA from UCLA, as well as an honorary doctorate from Babson College. You've done so much, and I wonder, how would you describe your story? Where did it start?
Well, believe it or not, my career really started in the jewelry business, not a tech business. I started a part-time job when I was at UCLA getting an MBA. So I worked for a jewelry manufacturer in downtown LA. It was a small manufacturing company owned by a Jewish family. And that's where I learned sales and marketing. So I have a deep understanding and love of many things Jewish.
I didn't know that. how long have you been doing sales and marketing in the traditional world, which I started in, of course, as well?
Oh, in traditional world, you mean jewelry?
Jewelries?
Yeah, so I was in the jewelry business for about 6 years.
Wow. I didn't
yeah.
know that.
Yeah.
And the next step was really Macintosh, or was there anything between?
Well, I was in the jewelry business, and then I got an Apple II, and I fell in love with computers. So my college roommate eventually hired me into Apple. I worked for a small software company for about 6 months, but that software company was acquired, and the acquirer wanted me to move to Atlanta, and I didn't want to move to Atlanta. So that's when I made the switch from a small software company to Apple as a software evangelist.
Wow. And have you been evangelist during all your stages since then? Or?
Yeah, so I went to work for Apple as an evangelist. I left to start a company. I returned to Apple as Apple's chief evangelist. I left to start a company. And basically, I've been at Apple twice. And I've been an entrepreneur, speaker, and author since then.
The challenge of choosing the customers that are most likely to adopt, use, and buy your product is one of the most important parts of business success. I love Kate Erickson's answer because it's obvious that anyone at Entrepreneurs on Fire's team knows who their customer is by heart. I advise you to watch the video of EO Fire's avatar. You will find the link in the show notes of this episode. Kate Erickson is a creator, engager, and implementer over at EO Fire, a 7-day-a-week podcast that interviews today's most inspiring and successful entrepreneurs. She is also the host of Kate's Take, the EO Fire audio blog, and author of The Fire Path, a beginner's guide to growing your online business. Kate is passionate about helping entrepreneurs create freedom in their business and life through developing systems and processes that can help their business scale and grow. Can you please tell us who your customers are today and the story about how you figured out who are your most passionate potential customers or consumers?
Okay, so for the business EO Fire, our perfect customer, who we often refer to as our avatar, is a mid-aged male who drives to and from a corporate job every single day and who sits in a cubicle, who's not happy with the way that his life is, who comes home at night, gets to spend very little time with his kids and his wife, and then sits on the couch wondering, why is my life this way? Why do I spend most of my time going to a job and doing things that I don't like? And why am I spending so little time doing the things that I love the most, like spending time with my kids and my wife? There has to be another way. So the reason that we found that to be our avatar is because what we were able to provide that person is this inspiration and motivation from entrepreneurs who have created successful businesses, who have created freedom in their life so that the majority of their day is spent on things that they love. And the very small portion of their day is maybe sometimes, because we all have to do things that we don't like sometimes. But we're trying to flip that script so that our perfect customer comes to us for that inspiration, for that motivation to learn how they can get out of that corporate job so that they can create freedom in their life to be spending more time with their family or whatever that freedom is for them. Now, how we figured that out in the very, very beginning, John, my partner here at EO Fire, he was actually his own avatar. That was him.
So interesting to hear the story.
So that's how we first originally kind of came to that. And of course, there's been many iterations with that. We've learned a lot more about our avatar since we launched the business, and it's continuing to evolve. And of course, Hayut, as you know, that's not the only person that we speak to. But I have a feeling we're probably going to be getting into that a little bit more here.
Best advice about approaching the customers. I chose two answers for the best advice given. The first answer is the answer of Michael Stelzner. Beside being one of the most successful entrepreneurs that had had a huge impact on social media as a marketing tool, Mike's answer represents the answers that most of our guests constantly repeat. Talking with your customers is key. Michael Stelzner is the founder of Social Media Examiner, author of the books Launch and Writing White Papers, and the man behind Social Media Marketing World, the industry's largest conference. He is also host of the Social Media Marketing Podcast, founder of the Social Media Marketing Society, and host of the weekly Social Media Marketing Talk Show. You know, we are all about entrepreneurship and startups and talking about how to react and act with your customers. And I wanted to ask you about your concept or beliefs on the way a startup or entrepreneurial business, which you have been as well, should approach its customers, and give our listeners your best advice for their customers' approach or focus.
I think that when you're getting started, you really need to talk to lots of people to understand what their problems are. So that could be going to an event where lots of people that match your customer happen to be and talking to them to understand what their problems are. Or if you've already got some people on an email list, it could be sending them an email and asking them lots of questions so that you can understand what some of their challenges are. But somehow to survey or to ask what the challenges are, and, you know, I think is the number one way that anybody can be successful, because a lot of times we guess. We think everyone is like us, which is totally not true. And we say, if everyone's like me, then they'll be interested in this. And we just throw it out into the world and hope it sticks. But if you do a little bit of research, you can test those assumptions. And if those assumptions are true, then great. But if they're not, you will prevent yourself from doing a lot of work that may or may not be successful. So I think it increases the likelihood of success.
The second answer I chose to this question is the answer of Vladimir Butsvadze, who describes step by step how he prepares himself for a sales meeting with an important customer. It's a unique opportunity to hear such a clear and precise description of this process. Vladimir Butsvadze is a serial entrepreneur, leading authority on digital marketing, and top influencer, professor, Fortune 500 consultant, trainer, the CEO of Butsvadze Marketing Solutions, a full-service digital agency serving Fortune 500 clients that generates the best ROI from social media. Approximately 100,000 individuals follow him. He's inspiring top brands including Aston Martin, HP, KLM, FedEx, and more. Vladimir's research is recognized by London Business School, and he has been featured in Forbes, The Economist, and many more. Vladimir has won over 36 awards in digital marketing, ranking among the top 100 digital transformation and B2B marketing influencers by Onalytica. Vladimir transforms brands and builds businesses. What are your perspective, concepts, and beliefs regarding the way entrepreneurs and any business actually has to approach their customers today through the social media, through the digital marketing, and I would like to ask you to give your best advice to our listeners regarding how to approach the customers, how to be a customer focused.
Well, you know, businesses all sizes need new customers, you know, and and my company's marketing plan helps me approach potential customers and ask them to spend money on the products I'm offering, you know, and I prepare extensively, develop a detailed plan for my customer visit and execute my plan professionally. There are a few steps that I focus on. For example, first is preparation. I assemble all the latest information on the products I'm selling. I ask about any problems with my company's operations so I can prepare if customers have questions about them. Then next step is I study product information in terms of what customers of my target market find important. Identify the features the target customer will find interesting. I ask customers what they liked about dealing with me, you know. So then I study the new customers I'm going to approach, make sure that I know if they have problem with existing suppliers or are looking for new providers. And then I identify first contact if I'm approaching a company that look for details about contact positions or authority. So then next step is also a strategy, right? I decide who I'm going to ask for business. I call sometimes companies to verify that I contact handle orders and suppliers in the field of activity. So for individual sales, I make sure that person I talk to is decision maker in the household.
Sure.
Then I develop a list of my company's strengths in the new customer's market segment, make a list of actual needs for each new customer, and add potential needs that I think might be appropriate for the client. So then for each new customer, I prepare a strategic approach that matches the actual potential needs with one of the strengths of my company. For example, if a client has high energy costs and my product is unusually efficient, I highlight that advantage, you know. And the last step is execution. I make an appointment with my potential new customers, arrive at the agree upon location, and dress well but appropriately for the industry. After introducing myself, I start meeting by asking about the client's business to verify that my list of clients' potential needs is accurate. So then I introduce my company as a potential supplier by executing my strategy of emphasizing the advantages that correspond for the client's needs, provide documentations that substantiate my company's capabilities. Then the last two steps are I conclude the meeting by asking for a commitment. If the client is not ready to order, I ask when they might decide to place an order. Make sure that I leave with an agreement on the next step, where it is timing for a decision or date when I will call back. So such a written note to the client thanking him for the first time and reminding him of the next step I agreed to, make sure that I take the next step unless it is clear that the customer has no interest in placing the order, you know. So these steps of approaching my customers works, you know, because our company have thousands of successful happy clients, and we are pretty proud of them, of their successes, and how everything works, you know.
Sure. If I take what you said, which is extremely interesting, the main two things that I take from you, and tell me if I am correct in that, the main two things that I felt should be emphasized is, first of all, how well you prepare the meeting and how well you study the client.
Of course.
And understand the client, what is important to the client, what their needs are. And the second thing that you said, and I think should be emphasized, is that you, unless the client is not going to make a purchase, you are actually leave it to yourself. You don't let the client say, okay, one day I'll call you. But you say, when should I call you back? Is that correct?
Of course. You know, we have a different approach to customers. And what is my biggest success due to the right customer approach, right? We offered personalized customer experiences and we took advantage of positive social proofs. We remembered that the quality is important than speed.
Mark Hemion is a successful entrepreneur that sold one of his startups to Google and YouTube and merged another startup with a global leader. He decided to close his last company, although it had 900 customers and revenues, and managed to return half of the investment before deciding to take a break from tech.
I've always been someone who likes to make things, whether it's applications or software or art. And I'm a recovering entrepreneur, I like to say, I guess. Last year I closed a startup that I had founded. We can get into this a little bit later, but I closed a startup that I founded in California, sold my house, and kind of took a break from tech. After 20 years of tech, kind of took a break and moved out here to the north shore of the island of Oahu, where my wife is from. There is a paradox in all these great quotes we read that you learn so much from failing and it's all about the experience. But I got to tell you something from my point of view, when you fail, it really sucks. It hurts. You let a lot of people down. People lose their jobs. Investors lose their money. There's real consequence. And I don't want to glaze over the real consequence of failure. There's consequences. There's bad stuff that happens. It isn't all like, okay, well, I learned a big lesson and I'm a better person for it. It hurts. It leaves scar tissue. I had what people would call a success. I had a startup in 2010 that got acquired by YouTube and Google. I spent 4 years working there at YouTube and Google and loved it. And they acquired our company. We had a cash windfall from that. It was more of an acqui-hire, not necessarily an acquisition.
Yeah.
So, but it was still great. Our family was able to buy a home. I was able to pay off tons of debt that I had accumulated from years of building startups. And I thought wrongly, but I thought I was a good entrepreneur because I had an exit. But you know what? It didn't matter. Like I just got lucky. I just got lucky. We had a great team and I just was a lucky random dude with a bunch of other, you know, talented engineers. And we just got lucky. It doesn't mean we were good entrepreneurs. Because we got acqui-hire does not mean we are good or better than any other entrepreneur out there who is racking their brains, trying to find market fit, having a tough time. You're just as good as any company that gets acqui-hired. Ship, a company I love, SHYP, shut down today. They were incredible. That startup was amazing. Their founder, brilliant, killer team. I used it once. It was like magic. I hit a button. A guy shows up at my house, grabbed the thing I wanted to ship off the table, put it in a bag, and it was gone. It was so cool. And that story is repeated every day. Thousands of brilliant, smart folks, you know, don't hit financial success. When I was up to my ears in debt too, by the way,
yeah.
I'd listen to these podcasts and I'd listen to some guy or gal who's made it and they say shit like, oh, well, money doesn't matter. I'm like, yeah, easy for you to say. I can't even like pay my bills. I can't even put gas in my car. So for those who are listening who are struggling on that financial, like I get it. Like you can't think straight if you're in debt up to your ears and if you can't pay your bills. It is the most stressful, terrible thing. And if you're going through that, you know, my heart goes out to you. I've totally been there. I had a point where we moved up. I worked, I did design for a company called Dig.com in San Francisco in 2008 or so. And we had nothing. I moved up there with three kids. I was the only employee with kids, I think. I was married with three kids, young kids. And we rented the crappiest house and the heat didn't work. And we would all sleep in the same bed at night.
Wow.
And I'd go to fill up gas in the morning. I didn't know if I'd have enough money to make it into work because we were just paycheck to paycheck, you know? But working at Dig, I met some friends who were engineers and we started working on our little startup at night. And that's what led to YouTube and Google. So had I never made that sacrifice to move my family up to San Francisco and, you know, not have just kind of, I don't know. It was a huge sacrifice. San Francisco is very expensive, but had I never done that, I would have never landed at YouTube and Google. And I would never, I wouldn't be here right now. I'll tell you that.
That's right.
And so then I was like, well, gosh, okay. Maybe I do know how to do this entrepreneurial thing. And I said, Kevin, good job on Hodinkee's kind of going. I'm going to go do my own. So I went out and I raised $2.3 million on my own. And created a design company called Design Inc. And we helped companies find designers. We built a platform for it. So you could go on there and say, hey, I need help with an app or a logo, or whatever. And we'd match you up with designers that I handpicked. I handpicked over 2,000 designers, interviewed them,
wow.
You know, scrubbed them. Yep. and it did pretty well. But we, you know, we got to a point where we were making revenue, but not enough to push onto a Series A. Mm. And so with $1 million left in the bank, I closed it down. Oh. I gave half the money back to our investors.
That was the last one?
That was the last one. That was the summer last year.
But why do you see it as a failure?
Oh, this one hurt the most because, you know, when I left Google and did North, it was with Kevin. He kind of raised that $5 million. You know, I was his co-founder. This last one, this was mine. I was the founder. I was the driving force behind it. I think being a co-founder is cool, but it's kind of easy, you know? Sorry, all you co-founders, don't get mad, but you know it's true. They're not taking near the risk that the initial person has when they have the vision and the drive. And I built a platform that I wish existed, that I thought the market wanted, and it just didn't. And I was like, crap, I was wrong. And that sucks. It sucks to be wrong.
Yeah, but you will be right again. Yeah. Everything's okay. Who were your customers there? Who did you approach?
We had over 900 companies use Design Inc. It could be a small, medium, or large business. We had Facebook use us. We had Google use us. We had insurance companies use us. Anyone could use Design Inc. It was free.
It sounds like a great success to me. And it also sounds, really, I must say, finding out that it's not going to be as successful as you promised and closing it and giving back some of the money, I think it's success. And you said at the beginning of this conversation that a person is choosing what is a success for him.
Well,
biggest success due to the right customer approach. For the biggest success, I thought you would love to hear Bruce Van Horn's beautiful story. Bruce Van Horn is a best-selling author, speaker, thought leader, transformational life coach, business and leadership coach, marathon runner, and cancer conqueror. Bruce hosts the Life is a Marathon podcast, which has millions of listeners in over 210 countries around the world. Bruce is passionate about sharing his life experiences and respected insight to help people overcome their negative thinking and limiting beliefs and develop a winning mindset. Bruce loves coaching people to become the fullest expression of who they were created to be. He lives in Richmond, Virginia. And now I would like to ask you to share your biggest success with the customer. And I would like to ask you to tell us a story of perhaps your greatest or the one you remember, the most significant success as a result of the right customer focus, or something that you did right with customers, or if you prefer to tell about one of your customers' story, it's okay as well.
Yes, sure. So I worked with a CEO who was a brand new CEO of a large I won't mention his name because of the organization because of a confidentiality agreement. But this was one of the largest spiritual organizations here in the United States. While they have a worldwide spiritual following for their teaching and their philosophy of God, most of their work is here in the United States. And so they hired a new CEO, and part of his executive compensation package, because he had never been a CEO before, was executive coaching. And so they hired me to be the coach for this new CEO of this large religious spiritual organization. Yeah. And we wound up working together, and he was telling me about some of the difficulties that they had. And about 15 years ago, they were at the height of their donations, of their follower base. They were bringing in, you know, in the neighborhood of $500 million a year in donations. And through the sale of spiritual publications, they were doing really, really, really well. And from that point on, publication sales went down and donations went down, and they brought him in to save the day. And again, the board of directors who hired him, they were still missing the point. And the problem that, you know, he thought that, you know, he needed to come in with new ideas for marketing and new ideas for leading the internal organization, because they had fallen from about 400 employees to about 250 employees over this 15-year period. And after working with him and really understanding what happened at the beginning 15 years ago that led them to where they are now, and what had happened was that their board of directors at that point, they were pastors, they were religious leaders who didn't really have a lot of business management experience. They were just doing what they loved to do. They felt they were doing what they felt called by God to do and to share with the world. And what happened was somebody said, okay, you know what? We bring in hundreds of millions of dollars every year. We have 400 employees at our headquarters. We need to start operating like a corporation. And so they made this shift and they hired a CEO who had no religious or spiritual background. She had big business. She had been the CEO of another very successful publishing company. And it wasn't even related to spirituality. They said, we are going to hire the best people for the roles that we need, regardless of what they believe. And they didn't realize that when they started doing that, donations started going down instead of up. And so when this new guy came in, and I'm working with him not only on his mindset and his idea, branding is all about energy. Okay, so your company's brand is the story that your customers are telling about your business, your interaction with them. So everything is energy. But I asked them, once we got down to it, he told me that they had a weekly chapel service in their chapel on their campus. And he invited me to come to it when I was doing an on-site visit. And he said, now, you know, we can go to this thing and it'll be a good way for you to learn more about what we do here. But there will only be about 10 or 15 people there. And I said, well, why are there only 10 or 15 people? He said, well, I understand there used to be well over 100 people there every time we did it. But as we've moved on, the overwhelming majority of our employees, they don't practice this spiritual belief. Hmm. And I said, that's your problem. I said, you've got people producing literature. You have everything is energy. So everything radiates out from the person who answers the phone to the person who develops your marketing literature or your prayer guides or whatever it is. All of that energy goes out of your building into the world. And if people who are working in your organization don't believe the very same things that you're encouraging other people to believe, that energy is attached to every box. It's attached to every phone call. And I said, your problem isn't going out to attract more customers. Your problem is all internal. You've got parenting issues. And part of it is going to be by starting to shift that philosophy. And again, I go back to Zig Ziglar, who always said, hire for attitude, not aptitude. And they had done just the opposite. They had hired for skill set, not for attitude or energy or belief. If you hire people who are totally on fire for your product or service or message, then that energy will radiate out. And we can send them to marketing training. We can send, you know, we can send the right people off to IT training. But if we just bring in outsiders who only care about IT and not the overall message of the organization, that's the problem. And so the success was that once he started making that idea and communicating that back to the board of directors and back to the leadership team, they did go through a round of firing, and they wound up bringing people in who were out in the field, already believing in their belief system. Within a year, donations and publication subscriptions were up over 50% from where they had been the year before that.
Wow. Recommendation of a tool for customer focus, marketing, or sales. As I promised, we prepared a full list of most recommended tools of our most successful guests at the show notes of this episode. For this answer, I chose Joe Polizzi's answer about the best tool he relies on the most. Joe Polizzi is the founder of Content Marketing Institute, a UBM company, the leading education and training organization for content marketing, which includes the largest in-person content marketing event in the world, Content Marketing World. Joe is the winner of the 2014 John Caldwell Lifetime Achievement Award from the Content Council. Joe is the author of 4 books, including his latest, Content Inc. His 3rd book, Epic Content Marketing, was named one of the 5 must-read business books of 2013 by Fortune magazine. Can you recommend the best or most effective technological or digital tool that's related to customer focus, marketing, or sales?
It's been happening for a long time. And if you go back before 1990, there were only 8 ways that your customers could get information. They could get it from, you know, television ads. They could get it from magazines, from newspapers, from radio, from billboards, from fax machines, those types of things. The technological advance happened along with Google and smartphones, where your customers became in control of their own buyer's journey.
Sure.
Where they could, you know, your customer has a 24/7 informational device with them at all times. And what that meant is they went from the 8 ways, those 8 technologies that were available before 1990, that meant that the conversation was owned by media, big media companies, and by brands with very large advertising budgets. And it was like that for 50 years, from 1950 to 1990. Basically, marketing was interruption. It was about who has the largest purse strings and who can interrupt in a way and get their name out and product out in front of these customers. Today, you know, into, let's say, you know, late 90s, 2000 and beyond, that completely flipped. And that's why we're seeing this movement into content marketing, because your customers can ignore us at will. They can ignore your advertisements. They can ignore your terrible content. Everything you're trying to push, they don't care about it. They don't care about what you have to sell. They only care about their own needs.
Sure.
And that's where really market, that's why we can have a book called Killing Marketing. That's why we can talk about these changes, because we've had to change in marketing, because we have to figure out, look, it can't just be about us. It has to completely focus on the customer or we're going to fail. So it's that combination of the technology move from the power of for brands and media companies over to the consumer that changed everything.
If you had to choose one tool that you should recommend our listeners to use, what would it be?
Oh, I'm going to go old school on you. This is email. The number one thing that I would do if I'm starting fresh today, as we record this in 2017, and I'm like, well, what's going to carry my business forward? I would develop an audience of email subscribers that will actually want to subscribe to your email. And then from that email, that's where you will generate your product and service sales. So I would absolutely 100% focus on email. It is the audience of subscribers that we have the most control over. Social media is fine, and Facebook and Twitter and everything else is fine, but you don't control those connections. They're controlled by Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and everyone else. And they will take away your rights in a heartbeat, which they've done brilliantly over the past 5 years. So what do we have to focus on right now? And I would say that it would be email.
Recommendation of a person or a book that impact your customer focus and success. I couldn't find a more beautiful answer for this question than Jeff Bullis's answer. Jeff included some great recommendations here, but also used this answer for a last piece of guidance. Jeff Bullis is a digital entrepreneur, marketing blogger, keynote speaker, digital strategist, consultant, and best-selling author. He works with companies and executives to grow their online personal brand businesses through social, digital, and marketing automation. And he gets over 5 million visitors to his blog per year. Jeff was listed on Forbes as one of the top 20 influencers of CMOs for 2017 and was ranked by Apollo as the number one global digital marketing influencer for 2016. Was there any person, service provider like a mentor, consultant, advertiser that really impacted your way and your customer success and can help other entrepreneurs as well? Or you can also name a book, but if there is any person, I would like to hear this story.
So there was two books I mentioned at the beginning, Tim Ferriss, The 4-Hour Work Week, which is an inspiration, the David Mehman Scott, The New Rules of Marketing and PR, Seth Godin, his books were also an inspiration, the blogs by HubSpot, the blog by CopyBlogger, and the list goes on. So I suppose I look at some of the best in my industry and also associated industries and sectors. And then I'm an avid reader, so I maybe read 30 or 40 books a year.
Wow. Was there any person that really impacted your way, your journey?
No, it's a collection. I couldn't say one person was the primary source. As I mentioned, Tim Ferriss, David Mehman Scott, and then inspiration stories, you know, that you read, like about Steve Jobs,
Through the books.
So the area in which I, and some of those like CopyBlogger, Social Media Examiner, some of those other blog, when I started, there were a lot were in the same space and we're all learning. But for writing, for example, CopyBlogger was an inspiration. Headlines, they were as well. Then in terms of content creation and writing, the book by Stephen King, the famous fiction writer, he wrote one of his only nonfiction books is titled On Writing. That book has been a great help for me in being able to craft my writing better, to develop my skills. Then there's a bunch of other books around that as well, and blog posts. And, you know, sometimes I've been inspired by TED Talks. So the inspiration comes from many sources. And there's a great quote by Stephen King. And he says, if you want to write a lot, you need to read a lot. There is no other way, because inspiration and innovation does not come from a vacuum. It comes from feeding your soul and feeding your mind with inspiration and education.
I like that, because what you're actually saying is there isn't a one book or two books that really can change everything, but what we should do is actually seek for the inspiration and look for it in different books and different TED Talks and different podcasts and whatever. So we should feel ourselves.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of us start off curating, and then we actually, as we develop skills and more experience and more knowledge, that curation then turns into your own voice. You know, finding your own voice online or offline, whether it's from stage or whether it's in your writing or whether it's, you know, on a video or a webinar or even a podcast, you need to get to a space where you're no longer speaking from the notes. You're just speaking from the heart and the soul and the mind that is yours. And that is often, in most cases, in fact, I think every case, all that inspiration, innovation is a collection and a curation of past experiences that becomes you over time.
What is your one key success factor? The last answer is kept for John Lee Dumas. Besides the fact that I like and believe in his answer for his one key success factor, JLD is the person that influenced me to choose to deliver my message of the customer-focused entrepreneur through podcasting. And I believe John is shaping the model of the new successful entrepreneur. John is the host of EO Fire, an award-winning podcast where he interviews today's most successful entrepreneurs 7 days a week. JLD has grown EO Fire into a multi-million dollar a year business with over 1,500 interviews and 1.5 million monthly listens. He is the author of the Freedom Journal and the Mastery Journal, two of the most funded publishing campaigns of all time on Kickstarter. And all the magic happens at eofire.com. There are many things always that affect success. I want to end and ask you about your key success factor.
You know, I would say that in a nutshell would be my investing in myself through mentors, through masterminds, because I didn't know what I didn't know. And I didn't know a lot about podcasting, but I knew that if I was willing to invest in myself with the right mentors, surround myself with the right people via a mastermind, that I was going to be able to give myself the best opportunity to succeed. So, you know, I had to do it just like you. Hey, you've invested in yourself in many areas and you're deriving the success from those investments. You know, it's people that are not willing to invest both financially and time-wise. Because, you know, it's not always just about investing money. It's about investing your time as well. And those people that aren't willing to invest in themselves with those two things are going to have a lot harder road than people that are. And so for me, investing in myself with the mentors, with the masterminds, with the communities, with the conferences, it's been everything.
I couldn't agree more, and I think the issue is to know to invest in yourself also after 30 years or 20 years or 10 years that you're in the business, and there's so much for us to study and learn.
Yeah.
And thank you for having so much things I can learn from you. And for you, our listeners, until the next time, it all goes down to this. You either reach or miss. Keep reaching your goals and vision. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Reach or Miss Show, the podcast for the customer-focused entrepreneur. You can find all the information, links, and resources that was mentioned at the show in our website, reachormiss.com. See you next week.